rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Are you?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Are there any modifications to the agenda this evening? Is there any here? Yes.
Would you please push number 10 back until Troy and Monica will be a little bit later. Maybe 7:30, so just keep pushing it back if they're not here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is there anyone here who'd like to see an item moved up or down on the agenda? Is there a motion to approve the agenda as submitted with the caveat that we might have to postpone number 10 until our guests arrive? Trustee Cooper, second. Trustee Green. I think I need to take roll pretty soon. Let's take roll first. Trustee Cooper.
Here.
Trustee Genrich.
Here.
Trustee Green.
Hi.
Trustee Vanhoven is here. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Gass.
Here.
Trustee Zeller.
Yes.
And we have a first motion from Trustee Kopisch and second Trustee Green to approve the agenda as submitted. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, first of all, we'd like to congratulate Steve Vandenhoven on his appointment as Village President, reappointed for another 3-year term commencing today, April 16th, 2013, and ending April 18th. 2016, with a total count vote of 1623. Congratulations.
Thank you. Narrow margin of victory.
Judge Jim Charnesky is not here, but we'd like to congratulate him on his 4-year term as Village Municipal Judge, commencing May 1st and ending April 30th of 2017, with total votes of 1602.
Thank you. Want to cover the Icanton Sioux?
No.
Who's going to do that?
Oh. A presentation.
Are you ready for that one?
Yes.
All right. Kerry Mouse from Wisconsin Public Service is here to do a recap or final report of the pilot program. So, there you go. Let's take a look.
Good evening. So, as he had mentioned, I'm Carrie Rouse from Wisconsin Public Service. I was one of the project managers on the I Can Conserve project. So, we just wanted to touch base a bit and give you some final participation numbers and some of our project findings from the evaluation that was done, which our final report is not finalized as of yet. It's in draft form, but that'll be available about mid-year here. So thus far, we had 82%, or through the end of the project, we had 82% participation. That included 2,600 approximate households that participated and around 90 businesses that participated. This shows KWH, KW, and Therm savings as well. Now that goal percentage, you know, initially we didn't really know what to set that at as it was a pilot. So 82% is a great milestone. Alloway has done a wonderful job in participating and taking action to save energy in the community. So it's a commendable goal that you did meet. It's significant savings as well. As assuming 9,960 kilowatt hours is approximately what is needed to power an average single-family home in Wisconsin for a year. So with the 990,000 kWh that was saved overall for this project, that could power 100 homes for 1 year. So that is an astonishing result. So very good. The residential HVAC incentives that were paid out was about $6,800. And then the home energy audit incentives that were paid is $1.4 million within your community. which is just overwhelming when you see the numbers in total. That is about 74 residential HVAC customers were participating. And then that's about 776 reviews that were completed, with approximately 400 reviews that were done, and then completed jobs were 416. So we had many reviews. Some people didn't move forward with the changes to their home, but there were 418 households that completed the jobs,
totaling $1.5 million.
So some of the community benefits, there was an internship collaboration with NWTC, as Brad knows very well of. There were four students that helped influence about $3,500 of savings per year via lighting and HVAC upgrades for the community, village buildings. 203 households switched to non-standard rates. 200 households signed up for Cool Rewards, which is our direct load control program. You did have many customers that were already on direct load control, but this is a very significant increase in that program, so that was made great strides forward there. And 215 customers had taken advantage of a specific tool, whether it was the in-home display or the smart thermostat that was installed in the home, which helped them manage energy use and understand that energy use within their home. Now, the community reward, we've heard of frequently, but we are now complete with tallying up all the results. And we've heard of the Green Isle Park lighting project, which has now been determined to be the walking path project, where they'll be installing 19 LED bollards. And that's a value of approximately $22,000. $21,000 of it contributed by the I Can Conserve project as the final reward. And annual savings those will bring is approximately $755, or about 5,800 kWh per year, compared to a standard bollard. And I believe installation will be beginning in May.
Weather pending. Okay. Good.
This is just a table that's capturing some of the evaluation categories and the results. So I will give you here a brief overview of the findings from our evaluation, but there are so many lessons learned, and I just won't be able to touch on those all today, so we'll touch on just a few. But awareness of energy efficiency topics increased. Number of energy-related information sources, that increased. I Can Conserve awareness, we got nearly 100% as a result. Attitudes of energy efficiency, slight increase there. And you can see we did have several increases throughout the program. And then, you know, there was some movement forward in motivating people and getting them educated on energy efficiency overall. So overall, from a program perspective, we had approximately 6,500 households participate. Now, that's not just in Alloway. That was all three communities. But we think that was just a significant participation number. And then about 360 businesses. So from a residential perspective, customers stated that it would take about $25 of savings on a monthly basis to justify switching to time-of-use rates. Energy advocates were very crucial to the success of this program. They built really strong relationships with your customers. It was a local contact, so they were all from this area in Alloway. So they were approachable, they had familiarity with the area, and customers just were very comfortable and willing to move forward based on that local hire. From a commercial perspective, the pilot didn't affect business attitudes towards energy efficiency much. The staffing grant was probably the program that experienced the most changes, and subsequent success of all the business programs.
What is a staffing grant?
The staffing grant was when we had people out in the field, and the initial goal is different than what the result was. So we would have students out there, and they were initially going to help put together an energy management plan for organizations within your community. What it ended up in is working with organizations so closely that they immediately adopted those enhancements and moved forward with them. So, you know, there were other focus bonuses in that, so it made it very easy for them to move forward with those enhancements. Mm-hmm. For instance, the NWTC students that assisted with some of the village buildings as well. Overall, some of the outcomes, customer satisfaction was high throughout the project. Customer complaints accounted for less than 1% of the total number of customers who participated. Timely communication resulted in a very low percentage of escalated calls. The school-to-home program is something to make mention of as well. KEEP, who is had a partnership with all the schools, and they went into the schools and educated the teachers. We had 109 teachers that participated in this program, and 56 of those were from the Alloway schools, your elementary schools. So that, I mean, that's more than half. That's wonderful. They have a very solid partnership with the schools and have a great reputation, so we think that that really carried forward and made it a success. There was added business for local contractors, and that would be your HVAC, your lighting contractors. So they, you know, were engaged in the process. Reduced energy consumption. And then an integral part of the success of this project is the partnerships that we had, specifically with the community leaders, the Public Service Commission, CUB, Focus on Energy. You as a community made this a success. So we're ever so happy you allowed the project to be in Alloway and let your customers take part in that. So our next steps, the final I Can Conserve report with all of the project findings, successes, challenges, so the good, bad, and the ugly, are going to be in the report. That is due to the Public Service Commission June of this year, and we will provide that report to each community. Now that will include KEMA, who was our evaluation consultant, their overall evaluation findings, and then it'll have a WPS report as well, which will talk about challenges, resolutions, successes, and then also an appendix from Focus on Energy talking about specific programs and the successes there. Speaking of Focus on Energy, an outcome of this pilot is going to be some program design changes. So for small business programs, it used to be kind of a cookie-cutter approach and one-size-fit-all. What they've learned from I Can Conserve is that custom incentives are more welcoming, people are and more appealing, so they got greater benefit. So they are going to push that forward in the small business program. And then also deadlines and special offers. If there's an end date, people will then know for sure, you know, what the expectations are and what they need to do by a certain date. Sometimes there was some misunderstanding of dates and that, so making sure that special offers out there with deadlines are a different approach for them. And then from WPS's perspective, there'll be some rate considerations. Our communication methods will change a bit, or there'll be improvements to things that are going well. And then from a tools perspective, we did learn that two-way communication does work within our infrastructure, so we'll be testing that at a greater level. So with that, extending an invitation to the celebration event that is this Thursday from 4:30 to 6:30 to each of you at the Heritage Hill State Park, that we will have some Focus on Energy information. WPS will be there. There'll be a short presentation similar to this for all Village of Alloway residents. So please join us if you can.
I'm sure Brad is going to join us.
So again, thank you for lighting the way. Without the dedication and overall support for things such as kickoff events, progress meetings, community events, Brad was a great supporter of the program and just a wealth of knowledge and just anything we needed for us. So he was definitely a huge help in this project. Thank you very much for that. We are grateful to you as community leaders for endorsing the project and allowing it within the community. Like we said, it did bring many benefits to your residential customers and your business customers as well. And really, my closing, just a big thank you. There will be a thank you in the paper the week of April 29th, thanking all customers in the Village of Alloway. So it's kind of sad it's coming to a close for us. It was an exciting project for us.
Thank you to you and to ICANN Conserve.
Thank you.
We were honored to have the program in Alloway. It's very consistent with the mission and the strategic vision of the village to have a program like this.
Good.
We appreciate all your work and Brad's work.
And thank you to Ray from behind the scenes, leading ICANN Conserve group to the village. Thanks, Ray.
Trustee Green.
Don't forget Tracy. Thank you for your assistance.
You're welcome.
I was just going to tell you, too, I think your impact's been more than you've been able to measure, because I know of several residents who did the at-home survey,
okay,
but then just decided to pay for it on their own and to make improvements on their own. So I would tell you your impact has actually been much more than this, because I know of quite a few households who decided to go with their own contractors but still instituted every measure that the home survey said to institute. So I don't know if there's some way of measuring that as you go forward, but I tell you, your impact's been even more than you reflect, and what you reflect is awesome. But, yeah, and I really appreciate the program being here, because it is very reflective of what Alloway stands for in green community, and we have a lot of old housing, and it was fantastic for people to be able to take advantage of that.
Well, all your customers were a pleasure to work with, so thank you.
Good.
And I will make sure I pass that along.
I agree with Trustee Green. I know quite a few people who did the survey and then because they didn't want to do it all at once.
Yes, and that's understandable.
They did some of it right themselves up front and have a schedule out for how they're going to finish it. Are you continuing to collect those data? I mean, you know all the households that took the survey and you know their historic energy use.
Yep.
Are you monitoring to see if the overall...
No, we're not monitoring going forward.
Okay.
What KEMA is taking into their evaluation is prior to the pilot and then post-pilot usage information.
Yeah.
And just taking it as a large group of data and doing the evaluation.
So are they looking at only the households that participated at some level that took the survey, or are they just Alloway overall usage before and usage after?
I think it's going to be overall. I will have to check the scope of KEMA's, tactic there, and I'm not really for sure certain. It may be both, but I think it's from an overall perspective.
Okay.
But we will provide that report to everybody when, we'll pass it along to Brad and Tracy when we do receive the final at the end of June.
Great.
Thank you. And that is a public document, so it'll be on the Public Service Commission website as well, so anybody can get access to that.
Okay.
Thank you for coming to us.
Thank you for having me.
Just one last thank you to Dave Disher and the rest of the guys in Parks for doing all the installations, as well as assisting in many other aspects. So they were very key components to our village property success. So
we look forward to park projects being complete.
Yes, we are too.
Thank you. Right,
thank you. Okay, announcements.
Village of Alloway will be accepting any unwanted prescriptions or over-the-counter medications for proper disposal. That will be held on Saturday, April 27th, here at the Village Hall from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
In your packet, you should have gotten a report from a quarterly report for our building inspection department. I just want to go to the last page and just give you an idea of what we've had for fees, about $14,000. Estimated project cost this year to date is just over $1.1 million, and a total of 82 projects have been completed so far this year. So it really has been a pretty busy spring, with all things considered, with the weather being kind of as poor as it's been. It definitely has kept Dan busy. He also has added his spring hours. So on Tuesdays, he's here till noon now, and then his regular hours, 8 to 9:30 on Thursdays. Any questions?
Mr. Green?
Just one question under Palmer valves. Two of them were $700. One of them was up to $3,000. And I know one of the things about getting permits is getting reputable service. Do we know any reason why the huge discrepancy between $700 to $3,000?
I do not. I'd have to check with Dan and see what the difference was with that.
I'd be interested, because I know one of the things we've run into is wide variations in what residents are charged. So.
And that's the estimated project cost that you said.
Right.
So.
But the project is just the Palmer valve installation, right? Otherwise, other things would be listed. Is that
one correct? Would think.
Yes, that's what I would assume, that it's just for the installation for that. But yeah, I can check with him and see.
Thank you.
Anything further? Public appearances. Brent.
Just two quick ones. We are working on the village website. Brought it to your attention a little while ago. We're looking at I got about four copies here. The front or the first page as being the, call it the logo, but will be the face of the of the website homepage. So, we added Village of Alloway to it. We met with Bruno Richards last week, and this was one of the designs we came up with, and we liked it. We added a few things to it, such as the Village of Alloway, and changed some of the colors. I think it looks pretty nice, so we're moving forward, unless anyone has any major concerns over what it looks like.
If you recall, we sort of sent a team of people out to take care of this and told them that they would. And they take the lead on it and check in with the board, but they weren't asked to come back to the board with all the different possibilities for designs. That would have been a design by committee would have been a little bit cumbersome.
Do you want to explain what that means?
Yeah.
Do you want to explain?
Okay, the swirls. All right, the colors are blue is the water, green is the land, and the yellow is the sun. So as you look at those swirls, that's all of them coming together. Everyone got that?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's marketing majors?
and the tagline, Brad?
The tagline, we liked it because it is kind of telling a little bit of a story. Historically progressive, I can conserve. It's another example of the village taking the lead on something and making your community more vibrant and energy efficient. Going back to, is the village the first settlement? We talked a little bit about the stormwater detention ponds. The village has been very progressive in that aspect. A lot of different things trying to incorporate what the village has meant to be progressive and tying in the historic aspect to it. So that's how the tagline came about. Mm-hmm. It's going to make you think. Why are we historically progressive? So hopefully with the Historic Preservation Committee and those stories starting to come out, we'll help tie a lot of this stuff together.
And I think part of the historically progressive, you go back in history with being the first city, you're pulling, I mean, Claude Alloway was historically here, and that was historically progressive right back there in history. So I really liked the way it ties those two things in, and I think it says a lot of what has been talked about at economic development and the historic society and things about what do we want the village to stand for, and the history is important, and the progressiveness is important, and we talk about that in our decisions and going green and those kind of things. So I was quite impressed with what the tagline was, because I just thought it fit what we've been talking about.
And blending it all well.
Easy. Yes. Transition.
And it's pretty.
And it's pretty.
Oh, and that's the French influence on the wording.
Yes, we want to make sure we stay with that kind of the heritage of that as well. To change the subject to a second issue, I've had a resident, you like this one, is asking what can the village do to curtail the number of turkeys we have in the village. I think there are five fairly large flocks within the village. I think that's what you call it. Seven?
I can tell you where there's a huge one right off of Webster.
Yep. So I've had some conversations with the DNR, and I'm meeting on Friday with Ben, can't think of his last name, sorry, who is now with Baby 12 Life Sanctuary. He is an expert on wildlife management. And there goes a deer. You're right out the window.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Okay, run across the road. So that will be next too. But.
Well, I had eight deer in my backyard right off of Webster not 2 weeks ago. And actually, they hung around for about a month. I mean, we have an amazing amount of deer and turkeys.
Yes. Yeah, so we're going to be looking into this. It will have to come back to the board, because there's a lot of implications that you need to really think about. Well, number one is the public perception of what you're doing. So trying to gather as much information as I can so I can bring it back, and we can make a educated decision on which path we're going. So I think our other group's here. That's all I have.
Thank you, Brian. Any other announcements this evening? Public
appearance. Can we just back up?
Yeah, sure.
Brad, you gave us both of these. Did you want the village's input on if we want to include the word village of, or?
Those were the two, kind of what we narrowed it down to after we made some color changes. Debbie did a little experiment around the village hall, which was kind of interesting. Where do you work? Village of Al. First thing you always comes off is village of. So that's why we added, and we felt that was probably very important to add to the logo or the website. So
My preference is we set up this committee for a reason, and to have you check in with the board, but I think we're going to leave it up to the committee, and we can't vote on it tonight anyway. So.
Right.
My inclination is to, unless someone feels strongly about this, wants to come back to the board for a vote, we're going to leave it with that committee and just have them keep us in the loop as they move forward.
Thank you.
But that is the only difference between the
yes.
first and second
mm-hmm.
page
right.
is the village of portion. Right. Okay. Thank you. Public appearances. Is there anyone who'd like to speak this evening? All right, hearing none, we will move on to item 6, a public hearing to consider adoption of Ordinance 2013-02, amending Section 11.05A3A, Residence District Use Regulations, to include all family daycare homes licensed and unlicensed. Is there anyone who would like to speak with regard to item 6A? Hearing none, we'll move on to item 6B, public hearing to consider adoption of Ordinance 2013-03, creating Section 11.293G to include A residence district building projects that require a conditional use permit in the site plan design and review land use zoning code. Is there anyone who'd like to speak with regard to item 6B? Hearing none, we'll move on to item 7. Is there a motion with regard to item 7A, adoption of ordinance 2013-02? Trustee Dart?
I move to adopt ordinance 2013-02.
Is there a second? Trustee Gass?
Oh, sir.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Is there a motion with regard to item 7B, adoption of ordinance 2013-03? Trustee Gass?
I'll move to adopt.
Is there a second? Trustee Green?
Second.
Discussion? For the benefit of our visitors, do you want to fill them in on how this has worked to this point, Administrator Fluke, please?
Sure, just on this last one?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's fine.
Basically, this is addressing our site plan review process, and it will allow us to have any developments, and typically it's churches that are in a residential districts, go through the site plan review committee or process before they were not listed as a use to go through the process. So that's really all it does. We've required the churches to go through in the past, and we just realized that they weren't in there, so we decided we should put them in. So.
Okay, so this, if we pass this, it will require churches to go through a process to make changes to the lot, to the property, right?
Yes.
Okay. And we talked about this before at the board level, and it's part of the process that it has to come back to another board meeting for a public hearing so the public can give their input and then we can vote on it, correct?
Yes.
All right, any further discussion on item 7B, adoption of ordinance 2013-03? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Trustee Green, did you have something?
No, just the next one.
Oh, you're just stretching. You're getting
limbering up. I'm getting ready for the next one.
All right. Item 8, under old business, action regarding the identifying municipal customer candidates for appointment to the Green Bay Metropolitan Sewage District Commission. Trustee Green.
Postponed to the first meeting in May.
The motion is postponed until the first meeting in May. Is there a second? Trustee Dart, discussion. Trustee Green.
It just hasn't been determined by all communities yet. So once that information's in, we'll be better able to make decisions in May.
Okay. Again, for those of you who are visiting, we have in our packet a recommendation from the Public Works Director to delay this vote for one meeting until that commission can meet later in the month. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Trustee Green, are you limbering up for this one, too?
No, I'm resting for this one.
Item 9, action regarding updating ordinance 5.03, parking of water craft, utility trailers, etc. Unless there are objections, I'll entertain discussion before we vote on this item. Again, for those of you who are visiting, we discussed this item for ad nauseum for probably a couple of years, and it involves the kinds of recreational vehicles, trailers, motorhomes that you can park on your property, where you can park them, how many there can be, and square footage and how big they can be, and so that they don't cause an eyesore or a nuisance in the neighborhood. So we thought we had this nailed down, and Mr. Roberts found sort of a loophole, and so we're back to trying to figure out what we really want to see here. So, Mr. Roberts, you want to summarize what you've given to us? I know you've highlighted in yellow the proposed changes, but if you want to summarize that and give a rationale for why you think we should go a particular direction, that would be great.
Actually, it's just two things. One thing we missed was the closed trailers. We didn't put anything in there about the closed trailers, so I had a definition in that. That's for the people that have their trailers they use for construction, everything parked in the driveway. Most people keep those things year-long. So I think we just put a definition for that and keep that in there. And that way they can just park their enclosed trailers. It's pretty simple. The second one is, I was talking to Tracy about this. I thought we were going to allow it where if somebody had a utility trailer where they can park it everywhere, park in the backyard, if they have a utility trailer, they could also keep a boat or a seasonal trailer. Mm-hmm. or another trailer in the front. The reason I thought that is a lot of people do. They have small trailers and keep them in the back, but they might own a boat, or they might have their construction trailer, an enclosed trailer, or they might have their snowmobiles. And the way we've written it, they can only have one trailer at a time, so they have to get rid of the utility trailer to park a boat.
But the way this is max two at a time, no matter what. One can be a utility trailer and something else. What you're proposing
that. One trailer, the way it's written.
No, but the suggestion here is they can have two.
Right.
Not
right.
Three.
Just the utility trailer. All
and one other one.
And a seasonal trailer or an enclosed trailer.
Okay, but they can't have...
They have all year long.
Okay.
I remember we went through that whole iteration of utility trailers were exempt and they weren't counted in the number, and then we decided, you know what, let's just count up the number of trailers. And I think what we wanted was two. Utility mm-hmm. trailers count as one.
Yeah.
And you can have a second one, right?
Yep, and that's it.
But that you're saying that's not the way it originally...
That's not the way it's reading in the final draft.
Mm.
I mean, what I might make a suggestion is in, I mean, to make sure that that's maybe even a little clearer, if we go to page 3, the subsection C, and then sub G, I see what you're trying to do, or in numerical limitation doesn't apply. What we really mean is the geographic location in conjunction with the utility trailer. What I'd suggest is where it ends up and it says or in conjunction with the utility trailer, we delete that. That sentence prefaces with numerical limitation. And maybe put the utility trailer language in the first sentence where any two such items cannot be stored in at the same lot location together.
What are we trying to say here?
We're trying to allow them to have two trailers, but the second one can only be a utility trailer.
In the same location.
In the same
right. The same location. Like they keep their utility trailer in the backyard, they're allowed to have their boat in the front yard, or their snowmobile in the front yard, or their enclosed trailer in the front yard.
Well, and that's where I have a question on G. It says the parking of two or more seasonal use trailers, they can only have one. One seasonal use and one utility, correct?
If you keep reading that one, that does say that.
Okay.
Sentence.
Problem is that first line, I think people would read that and
think
stop.
They do it.
And think they could have two seasonal mm-hmm. use. And it's like, no, you have one seasonal use and one utility, and that's it.
Well, and maybe that needs to be clarified there, but maybe it's the parking of more than two.
No, or even the parking of two. You have a utility, you can have a seasonal use, but you can't have two seasonal use.
We took more out because to us it sounded more like if you put more, then you can't have more than two. Right? Maybe you just said you can't have two or more. We put more than two, it makes it's two different meanings.
Well, but then I would say the parking of more than two seasonal use trailers, enclosed trailers, and items and camping equipment simultaneously, it's prohibited. I mean, we're prohibiting more than two.
Right.
So I think I'm
you can have two.
You can have two.
Well, but you can't have two seasonal use trailers. You can only have one seasonal use trailer and one utility trailer. And that's where I think this line gets ambiguous, because how it starts out, the parking of two or more seasonal use trailers, enclosed trailers, or items of camping equipment simultaneously on a resident or commercial zone is prohibited. I don't think people will get to that second line.
Can you have a seasonal use trailer and an enclosed trailer?
Not from what I understand from our discussions.
So you only can have two if one of them is a utility trailer.
Correct.
That's it.
You can have three if you park one in the garage.
Well, you can park it in the garage.
You can have as many as you want if you fit them in the garage.
That the parking of two is prohibited unless one's a utility trailer.
Yeah, I like that.
That's what we mean.
I thought the number that we agreed upon was two.
That's what I thought, too.
Two of what I
count. The way it was reading right now in the final version when we implemented it doesn't read that way. I go back to look at it again, but I've read it two or three times. It just, to me, it's saying you can only have, does it say parking of two or more trailers on any lot is prohibited? Something says about having a utility trailer excluded from that.
Does Steve's one work for one utility trailer and one other kind of trailer?
Basically, we're trying to get just utility trailer you can have, year round, everything else just stays the same.
So one. What we want to say is that the parking of any two trailers is prohibited unless one of them is a utility trailer.
That's what basically we're trying to get down to,
Yeah, I thought, and maybe the language was, I'm not going to say poorly written since it's boring, I thought the consensus was you can have two. Any combination you want it, but you just can't store them at the same lot.
That's where I thought we ended up, too. Because we had, like I said, we had the utility trailers being exempt, so they don't count in the total number, and then we thought, this is just a mess. You can have two. If one of them happens to be a utility trailer, fine. If one doesn't, that's fine, too. We might have to go back to the minutes and...
Well, we're talking about amending it anyway.
Right, but we were talking about amending it tonight.
Again.
What about if we drafted it to read the parking of more than two seasonal use trailers, enclosed trailers, and or items of camping equipment simultaneously on a residential or commercial zone property is prohibited. And any two such items, because you're allowed two, any two such items cannot be stored in the same lot location together, and then we can add except in conjunction with a utility trailer.
Unless one of them is utility
trailer. Unless one of them, it would be better. Unless one of them is utility.
If that's what we mean. That's a different meaning, though, than what Mark is saying. Mark is saying that we didn't allow two of any trailer.
The way it was, because C, sectional use trailers, utility trailers, and camping equipment. D, it says one utility trailer may be parked in the driveway, back, or side yard of residentially zoned property year-round, but not in conjunction and simultaneously with any other utility trailer, camping equipment, or seasonal use trailer at the same lot location. Maybe I'm reading that wrong, but to me that's saying you can't park two trailers.
Well, I don't think we have to address the utility trailer exemption in sub G, because it's already addressed in sub D. And it says you can park a utility trailer along with something else.
Yeah, D says you can park the utility trailer next to something else, just not another utility trailer. You can't have two utility trailers.
Well, I added note in why would that be? If you only have two utility trailers, knock yourself up.
I agree.
So I'd say delete in D the last language, but not in conjunction with another utility trailer.
For the one I've marked in yellow is what I've changed. Oh. Those are changes.
Yeah, I think D's fine. I think G, we just change it to be the parking of more than two, whatever it is prohibited. And you can't do it on the same lot location together. And then if you want to do the two utility trailers, or even the exception for the utility trailers is already in D. Because you can park those next to something else.
Mark, have we given out any warnings on this? This started April 1st.
I've given out 12, but not for this. It's for parking in the front of the yard.
All right.
There's been a lot of that.
Yeah, give out warnings and then all of a sudden change the rule.
I haven't been messing with people. It's just basically parking in the front yard.
I don't have any problem with the enclosed trailers parking on a hard surface, because those I think are a little bit different of a beast than what we see with utility trailers and the like.
Mark, how does D read right now if this is the change?
That's what I was reading where, but the last sentence says, they say utility trailer cannot be parking simultaneously or in conjunction with any other utility trailer, camping equipment, or seasonal use trailer at the same lot location.
And so we changed that to you can, in essence, park the utility trailer. Mm-hmm. And why did you change that? Because you thought that was the intent of the board?
The reason I thought that was intent, because if you ride around village and you look, a lot of people have the small utility trailers in the back that they keep there year long. And if we lend them just that and the guy comes in with his boat, he's going to have to get rid of the utility trailer. So that means he's going to have to find some place to put the utility trailer to use it. And we're talking about the small utility trailers we were allowing people to keep in the backyard.
I thought D was about the location of the yard, saying what that you couldn't have a utility trailer in the same part of the lot as another piece of equipment. Not that you couldn't have two in your yard somewhere, but that they couldn't be in the same lot location. That's what Dee said before you changed it.
Yes.
Okay. So the idea of a guy having a utility trailer in his backyard and a boat in his side yard, the old Dee wouldn't have affected him. They're not in the same lot location.
Right. Wouldn't allow two trailers on the same lot.
It would.
That would have affected it, yeah. You couldn't have utility on another trailer.
On the same lot?
Right.
Well, because I think it was interpreted to mean that you couldn't have more than two. I.e., you get one.
That's in G, though, right?
Yeah.
Well, you get one seasonal use or other, and you get one utility trailer, so you can have a combination of two. You just can't have three.
All right. To me, G talks about how many you can have. D talks about where you can put them. And the way that I heard Mark recite D was in the way it exists now, before you make the changes, is that you can't have a utility trailer parked next to something else in the same lot location.
Right.
Now, by lot location, I mean the same part of the lot. So they can't both be in the side yard. They can't both be in the backyard. They have to be. I didn't read that, interpret that as being you can't have them on the same lot, just not in the same location on that lot.
Okay, today would say the lot. I'm thinking the whole area.
Can you read D the way that it reads now one more time?
It says one utility trailer may be parked in the driveway, back, or side yard of residentially zoned property year round, but not in conjunction or simultaneously with any other utility trailer, camping equipment, or seasonal use trailer at the same lot location.
By lot location, I think we meant the same part of the lot, not the same piece of property.
Like you can't have them both of them in the driveway. You can take your utility trailer and put it behind
right.
the garage
okay.
and put your trailer. But if you're saying you can't have it on the same location, then you're again back to one trailer.
Right. So D talks about where on your piece of property you can put these things. And it's saying that you can't, the way that it's currently written, it says that you can't put your utility trailer right next to another piece of recreational equipment. It's got to be in a different part of your lot.
Okay.
So are we saying that we leave D as written?
I don't know. That's up to the board, I guess. But
that's
I just want to make sure that we're interpreting it correctly, because I don't want to make a change based on a different interpretation of what's currently written.
I think what I'm hearing from Mark is it's fairly common, you know, with the utility trailer, that as he sees, you know, residents utilizing their lot space, that it's somewhat typical to see, you know, maybe a seasonal use of a utility trailer in the same side yard.
Not commonly. Sometimes in the front, in the driveway, okay, you'll see that. But usually the utility trailers, usually they put them in the front yard, park the boat in the driveway. But which, like I said, that's not right. Not people park them in the front yard. We didn't want them on the side unless it was on a slab, but they could keep them in the backyard.
But you said it's more common for someone to have a utility trailer in the backyard, the boat in the driveway, or on the side yard. And you were thinking the way that you were interpreting D is that would have been illegal.
Right.
And that's not how I am interpreting.
I was just interpreting the lot. I was thinking the lot's the whole.
Right.
Property.
A lot is the whole property, but the lot location is the location on the lot.
Okay.
Whether it's a side yard, front yard, backyard.
So am I hearing consensus on the new D? Except getting rid of, you know, but in conjunction with another utility trailer.
I don't have a problem with people parking their utility trailer and their boat both on the side yard. I'm not sure what we decided last time. It sounds like last time we decided the way Dirt D is currently written, you can't do that. You can't be in the same lot.
That's not a problem. I understand that. Yeah. No, it was supposed to be where we didn't want two trailers in the front yard. We didn't want two on the side. We didn't want two in the back. You just wanted the
right.
seasonal use or enclosed in the front and the utility trailer to go in the back or the side.
Right.
or the utility trailer in the front, the bottom, and the sides, as long as it's on a hard surface.
So it's okay as currently written?
D.
Yeah, because the hard surface...
You want to make sure that people don't put two things in the same lot location, same area on the yard.
Well, because the hard surface is mandatory for everything besides the utility trailer, correct?
Right, right.
Okay.
But we gave them a little break, like it wouldn't have no patio block or bricks.
Right.
Yeah, we liberalized the definition.
Yeah, but it's still hard surface, mm-hmm. except for the utility trailer.
No, it's just for trailers.
So.
What is counter cars?
If someone has one of the driveways that sort of wraps around their garage, runs the length of the garage, they can't put their boat and then your utility trailer right in front of that because they're going to be in the same lot location the way that it's currently written.
That's what I thought we're planning to do, to keep them, get one bunched up.
Right.
Just want to be seen. You know, they want the driveway to put the other one on the side, though.
Not to make this messier, but when Steve is saying that, I picture a garage that has the driveway in front and then the one that goes on the side. You can actually call those two different locations because one's on the side of the garage and then one's in the driveway in the front. So you see some of those driveways, they have their driveway right into the garage, but then they make an extra parking lot on the side of the garage. I almost would see that as very easily being interpreted as two different locations.
To me, that's a side lot and then the driveway in front of the garage.
Yeah, it's all one piece of cement or concrete or asphalt.
But we define that, too, what the side lot is. And the side lot, the side yard is anything that's from the corner the house, front corner of the house. So,
the met side.
Right.
Then it is side. So it is two different locations at that point in time.
Well, only
the
if
driveway
your
and the side. Yeah.
Well, but only if your garage is parallel with your house.
Right.
Like if you go to my house, my garage sits behind. So my whole driveway is my side lot. So we've got some permutations on that.
So what do you want to do with regard to D? D to me is about location on the lot where you can put these things. And let's say, for the sake of argument, that we're going to let people have two of anything. If one of them's a utility trailer, then one of them's a utility trailer. If one of them's not, it's not. But we'll get to that in a second. Can they put both things on the same side of the house if one of them is a utility trailer?
Yeah, the only change, you know, that Mark makes in his proposed D is that a utility trailer only can be parked simultaneously with one other piece of equipment someplace in the same lot location.
So to have two, one of them has to be utility trailer.
If you're going to park them in the same spot.
Yep, got it.
And the only everything else has to be separated.
Yep.
The only caveat here in D is that the utility trailer can park in the same lot location as something else, but you still get no more than two.
Which I'm fine with, but then I think we need to strike, but not in conjunction with another utility trailer.
I agree.
Someone wants to stack two utility trailers on the side of their house. That's much better than one utility and one boat, right? I mean,
I agree.
That
makes it a little easier.
Well, let's vote with regard to this, then. Please, I'll entertain a motion with regard to the location in the lot where people can put.
You just want to do D?
Right now, I just want to do D, yeah.
Right.
Trustee Gass?
I will move that we adopt the proposed subparagraph D with the following changes: that in between one and camping equipment, we put item of, and that we put a period after same lot location and delete, but not in conjunction with another utility trailer.
I'm sorry, what was the first part, Christine?
Yeah. It was just textual. So the present version says with any one camping equipment, and I just inserted after one item of.
Okay. I'll second. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, then we need to address G, which really talks about the number that you can have. And the combination of things, whether utility trailer counts as one of that total or not. Mr. Roberts, you're interpreting it as
stated.
You can't.
And no two vehicles, no two trailers can park together unless one's utility trailer. Because we're just trying to keep it where utility trailer you can have year round and park that. But you can't have two seasonal, you can't have two enclosed, you can't have two.
And how does it read now? If this is the changed version.
The parking more than two seasonal use trailers, utility trailers, and or items of camping equipment simultaneously on a residentially or commercially zoned property is prohibited, and any two such items cannot be stored in the same lot location together. This numerical limitation shall not apply, and there shall not be counted any such items parked or stored entirely within the confines of the resident's garage or other permitted accessory structure.
So we need to take the location part out of there because we just covered that in D, right?
No, but the D location only pertains to utility trailer. Yeah, I'll make that.
Okay. I think this is what we wanted. We wanted no more than two, if I remember from our original conversation, where you're allowed two.
That's what I was. That was my interpretation.
You're allowed two, and they could be two of anything.
That's the utility trailer?
No. Yeah.
You're allowed two.
Okay.
But
two.
If they're both seasonal use trailers, that's fine. You got your two. That's it. But they can both be seasonal use trailers. They can be both utility trailers. They can be one utility, one seasonal. Any combination, you get two.
But that comment includes, you get two seasonal use trailers plus a utility.
No.
Or is it?
No.
That's what I thought. It's two total.
Two total. Yeah.
Here, I'll make one.
Okay.
I move that we adopt the proposed recommended language by Mark in subsection G with the following changes. The beginning shall read the parking of more than two. We shall delete or more. After the word enclosed trailer, after that comma, we insert utility trailers, comma. And then the only other change is in the very last sentence, we delete or in conjunction with a utility trailer, which is the end of that sentence.
Okay.
So then it would read, the parking of more than two seasonal use trailers, comma, enclosed trailers, comma, utility trailers, comma, and or items of camping equipment, delete that comma. Simultaneously on a residentially or commercially zoned property is prohibited. And any two such items cannot be stored in the same lot location together, period. And then the second sentence is the same, except for the deletion of or in conjunction with the utility trailer.
So we have two. That's it, two.
That's it, two.
Up to two.
And then I deleted the reference to conjunction with the utility trailer because we covered the exception for utility trailers in D.
Well, because that line made it sound like you could have two plus a utility
trailer.
I
need a second before you continue. Is there a second?
Oh, second.
Trustee Zeller?
Could we not just eliminate G entirely and use the sentence that you had come up with, Steve, with regards to quantity two, period, two trailers, period. Can you repeat the...
I wish I could.
It was any combination of two.
Are you talking about deleting the geographic location, put it on two on your side, two on your front?
Okay, I thought we addressed the geographic location
of utility
with D.
The utility trailer zone. If we read the way I proposed them, D and G together, you only get two no matter what. If it's not a utility trailer, you can't put them both in the same location. If one of them is a utility trailer, you know, one of your two, you can park it next to something else. Is basically the way this would read.
And I think we started out this conversation. I think I had some verbiage that covered both of them in one. Basically, what we want to say is you can have two. They can't be in the same lot location unless one of them is a utility trailer.
Yeah, and this would
that covers both of them without having separate sections for D and G, which can be very confusing.
Mm-hmm. And I believe that was our intent.
Right. If we had G read In essence, you can have only two. You can have two max. They can't be in the same lot location unless one of them is a utility trailer. That's covered. You don't have to have D at all.
And then, two, when we look at H, okay, that says enclosed trailers have to be on hard surface, but isn't it anything besides utility trailers have to be on a hard surface? And we liberalize a hard surface, which is great because we need to because of stormwater runoff. But it's not just enclosed trailers on hard surface. It's anything besides utility trailers on hard surface.
We have to keep the D because utility trailers are the only one we're allowing in the backyard.
Right. And not necessarily on hard surface either.
Well, I think you're right. I think H could be deleted because the introductory language to this whole section, when it allows specified parking, says it, and then only on a hard surface.
Okay, good.
But the closed trailer was the only one we're allowing year round because we weren't letting you seasonal use trailer if it's a snowmobile trailer. Or, you know, because seasonal use, you can't keep your watercraft trailer there all year long. You can't keep your snowmobile trailer all year long. Closed trailers added because that's somebody's work trailer, which they would need to keep there all year long.
But all those need to be on a hard surface.
Those, everything has to be on a hard surface except for
utility trailer. Yeah.
In the backyard.
Getting back to Trustee Gast's motion, the only problem I have with it, Trustee Gast, is it could just be a grammatical thing, but the way that it reads, this numerical limitation is kind of unclear to me. I know that we mean the numerical limitation of how many things you can have together, but I wouldn't want someone to read this numerical limitation as the parking of no more than two. That's a numerical limitation as well. So I think I'm proposing a period after is prohibited. And then new sentence, any two such items cannot be stored in the same location together unless one of the items is a utility trailer. I think that would clean it up.
That works.
Okay, there.
So there's a period after prohibited.
This one?
Right.
Okay.
And then strike the and. New sentence. Any two such items cannot be stored in the same lot location together unless one of the items is a utility trailer. Then you get rid of this numerical limitation, shall not apply, and there should not be counted.
Something with utility trailers and what's presently proposed in H.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Yeah, we can we can leave D and just put a period after year round.
Right. So we're not talking about lot location there anymore. We're talking about where you can put your utility trailer.
Yeah.
And then we covered location on the lot in G.
So the way it's sounding, and we'll have to make a cleanup motion with this, but D, we'll just read one utility trailer may be parked in driveway, back, or side yard of a residentially zoned property year round. That's all it says. And then your changes to G.
Okay, so delete the rest of that.
Yep.
We have to undo our D motion?
Yeah, we have to.
I'll make one.
Well, why don't we wait until we have it? I think we have it ironed out with everything. And then G, I don't think I got a second on that. Substitute motion for G?
Well, you want me to
get first?
You want me to make one just all together? So we have a substitute motion for everything that I motioned before.
Are we ready? What about H?
H, the way I'm going to propose it, H will just read enclosed trailers are permitted to be parked in the driveway or side yard year round.
Okay. Yeah, then I think we're ready. If you remember the
On a hard surface, though.
Well, but that's
on
already,
H, right?
That's already everything's on a hard surface, and that's covered earlier.
Except for utility trails. Okay, got it.
Trustee Zellman, go for it.
If this is going to be the all-encompassing motion, then are we including acceptance of the definition 12 in the enclosed trailer portion, the first highlighted text? If this
why don't we discuss that?
Yeah. Or would we be taking that separately?
We could do it either way.
I have a problem with the length, the 20-foot length. And previously, I understand we discussed length previously, but I'm still coming back to the 16-foot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now when we're defining the enclosed trailer at 20-foot, now we're at the size, an enclosed trailer size, that would be an auto transport size.
Right.
And I have a problem with that because we have one that's presently parked on the grass off of Hoffman, and now this would clear up that it has to be on a hard surface,
mm-hmm.
as I understand it, and the problem trailer is not on a hard surface, but this would invite the property owner to pave that side yard or that side area, and I'm worried about that. So the length problem.
Okay. Do you think that the vote on the definition will have any bearing on the other?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't.
While we have some momentum with the other three, why don't we get that out of the way and then we'll cover the definition.
Okay, so for just a point of order, I believe that we should withdraw the motion that's on the floor. And
for D?
Yeah.
Well, we have to...
For G, because right now we have a motion on the floor that's been seconded. Penny seconded the motion on G, on the G wording.
I think if we entertain a substitute motion, that will automatically knock it off.
Okay.
And I think it will take care of D as well.
D, you made a motion and voted on it.
And we're going to want to make some changes to D, so I think we can just offer a substitute motion that will cover basically G and then undo what we did with D as well, if that's in the motion. I would assume D, G, and H are all going to be in the motion, Trustee Gass?
That and all of his add-ons of enclosed trailers as they show up being changed throughout.
Okay, but not
except
the definition.
The definition.
Okay, yeah, go ahead, please.
Right?
Yes.
Anybody can do it.
I'll make a substitute motion that the ordinance be amended to include all of the highlighted references inserted as to enclosed trailers being added. I would make a substitute motion, or part of it, that proposed section C 1D be modified to read as follows. One utility trailer may be parked in the driveway, comma, back or side yard of a residentially zoned property year round and need not be on a hard surface.
Mm-hmm.
I would make as part of the substitute motion that subsection G be modified to read as follows. Parking of more than two seasonal use trailers, comma, enclosed trailers, comma, utility trailers, comma, and or items of camping equipment simultaneously on a residentially or commercially zoned property is prohibited, period. New sentence, any two such items cannot be stored in the same lot location together, period. This numerical limitation shall
Report.
Not...
Don't you want unless one is a utility trailer?
I'm sorry, unless...
You already excluded the utility trailer, did you not?
No, we got to add it there.
Okay.
I didn't see my arrow. I have too many arrows.
Yeah.
So picking up where we left off, any two such items cannot be stored in the same lot location together unless one of them is a utility trailer, period. This numerical limitation shall not apply, comma, and there shall not be counted, comma, any such item, parenthesis, close parenthesis, parked and or stored entirely within the confines of the resident's garage or other permitted accessory structure, period. I would propose that we adopt Subsection H, or subsection H should read as follows. Enclosed trailers are permitted to be parked in the driveway or side yard year-round, period.
Is there a second? Trustee Dart? Trustee Zeller?
The problem I have with that is I thought that in section G, mm-hmm. that once you define unless one of them is a utility trailer, period, I thought that we had taken care of all the scenarios. That next limitation, the numerical limitation, do we need that?
Yeah, because that's talking about things that are stored in the garage. Strictly saying okay. that things stored in the garage aren't counted okay. towards your...
So we do need that further explanation in G. Okay, I'm fine with that.
I'm still wondering what the numerical limitation refers to. Does it refer to the you can't have two in the same location numerical limitation, or you only can have two overall numerical limitation?
What it means is that the second sentence, the first sentence establishes the numerical limitation at two.
Right.
You know, that you can't have more than two. The second sentence qualifies that and says that that numerical limitation of two shall not apply and there shall not be counted and in parked inside the garage. I mean, so what's
okay,
in the
so
garage
it refers back to the two total,
exactly.
not to the location. That's the second clause of the first sentence.
Correct.
Okay.
Because that's the numerical limitation, no more than two. But basically, the second sentence says that you don't count anything in the garage. That doesn't apply to the two.
But then do we need that, or did you cut this off and I missed it, or in conjunction with the utility trailer?
No, that's taken care of.
That's taken off. Good.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, we're back to three.
Trustee Zeller.
In the second sentence of letter G, could the word numerical be substituted with the word quantity limitation?
Could just put a number two.
That help. I think that helps because then we know we're talking about the quantity and not the fact that you can't have two together, which is the second clause in that second part of the first sentence.
Mm-hmm.
I accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. Who seconded that?
Me.
Trustee Dart, you okay with that?
What is it?
The quantity limitation instead of numerical. This is, we'll say this quantity limitation rather than this numerical limitation. So it in essence says you can have everything in your garage that you want. It's not going to count towards the two that you get.
Outside the garage.
Outside the garage.
Okay, just make this clear enough. It's going to read that you're allowed two boats, two snowmobile trailers.
Yep. Yep. Two of anything, but they can't be in the same spot unless one of them's a utility trailer.
I don't know. From the complaints I've gotten, I don't know that people want two big, huge boats or one big, huge snowmobile trailer and one boat. Just know what complaints I get.
In the same location or on the same parcel?
On the same parcel.
The same parcel.
I don't think people have any problem with the utility trailer and then one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But when they start getting into multiples of,
mm-hmm.
Like your vehicle who can tow cars on libel that we're having an issue with, it just, yeah.
But you also have to remember that there's a limitation in here about seasonal use, right? Don't we still have the you can't store your snowmobiles in the summer, and you can't store your.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
So
the seasonal is.
So that's a.
Seasonal is still in there.
So if you had two things, they would have to both be boats, or they'd have to be both be seasonally appropriate. I'm not sure how common that is.
Yeah, that I don't think people have a problem with. It's the ones I've had complaints of where people have two. It's the big snowmobile trailer and the big boat, and then there's
one
usually a utility trailer and.
Right.
Yeah.
This is reasonable. Any further discussion? Please say no.
I could postpone to our meeting 3 years from now. How long it took us to get to the point we got a little while ago.
Not even a joke. Everyone understand the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Roberts?
No, now we need to figure out.
No, now we got another part of this.
Still for the definition. Okay.
20 feet versus 16.
Trustee Zeller, you want to entertain some discussion in regard to item 12?
Just here. Putting my plea in for that size of the enclosed utility trailer. The 20 foot dimension is this is a contractor type trailer. Would an enclosed contractor trailer would fall under this?
That would be a big one. Actually, when I put the 20 foot, I took something out of one of our old ones. I didn't measure anything. I was just, it's what the it used to be, it was 20 foot, so I just went by what the old.
Where are we able to see those trailers?
The old one said 20 foot, the trailers are all 20 foot, so I just put that in there.
With the camping trailers, did we go to 20 foot in the camping trailer?
Yes.
Yes.
Top of page 3.
And seasonal use trailers, did we have a length from
the
camping?
Or MCD 1.
Camping trailers, we went up to 26 foot.
Pardon?
Camping trailers, we went up to, said they couldn't exceed 26 feet.
I'm seeing on the top of page 3 the pop-up
20 feet.
Limitation.
20. 20 feet.
Of 20 feet. The other.
No, on page 1.
Camping trailers.
Page 1 says 26.
Oh, I see. That's camping equipment.
Right, the 26 foot is for people with RVs.
Yeah, the utility trailer.
Well, it's a wheeled vehicle. It's not a trailer for the camping equipment. So that shall mean a wheeled vehicle not to exceed 26 feet because somebody. One of the residents was talking about how most trailers are about 26, or their RVs are average about 26 feet long and would fit in a driveway.
Well, we have, I mean, pop-up campers is in that 26, and then it comes up later as being 20. Yeah, but it's included in on page 1 under B1. It says pop-up camper, so it makes it seem like you'd have a 26 feet there, and then we get to page 3, top of page 3, and it says 20.
We can take pop-up camper out of the camping definition. All you have to do is just delete it.
Right. We have to do something.
Or it could stay the same. You know, I mean, you can, you know, during the appropriate season, it can, you know, something up to 26 feet, if it's a pop-up type camper, can park from March to November. But if you want to store it year-round, it has to be smaller.
Okay.
By 6 feet. That's the way it reads now.
Okay. Yeah.
So I think the discussion was, I mean, the smaller little pop-ups. I mean,
right, you should be able to just, yeah, okay. Trustee Zeller, back to your problem with the 26, what is it, 26?
20.
The 20-foot length on the enclosed trailers. And I don't own a snowmobile trailer, so I don't know if a four-unit snowmobile trailer requires a trailer that exceeds 20 feet in length, or is 20 feet in length. But 16 would just seem more reasonable to me to eliminate the possibility of the auto transporter type enclosed trailer.
Mark, do we have a length limitation on seasonal use trailers?
No, we didn't put it.
asking Dave a four snowmobile enclosed trailer is 20 feet.
It is.
That's not reasonable.
I guess I'm fine with giving this a try, but at the 20 feet. See if we have problems. We might have to keep trying on this.
Right.
So, do I hear a motion with regard to the definition in section
B12? Can we also amend definitions B1 at that time, or did we decide to leave pop-ups in B1?
I think that Trustee Gass made a case where we can leave it in B1. That it's allowed up to 26 feet, but if you want to store it year-round, it's got to be smaller. The limitation is 20.
All right.
So both are possible. Trustee Gass?
I'll move to adopt the definition as proposed, with the only deletion being after 20 feet in length, to delete and may include enclosed snowmobile trailers.
Leave it out, and
yeah. I mean, my point there is, if it's an enclosed trailer, it's an enclosed trailer. Right. We put a foot limitation. I don't know why we need in may include enclosed snowmobile trailers, because it may include anything, you know, within the enclosure. So I don't know why we don't want to include the exam.
Is there a second?
That we said that was considered a seasonal use snowmobile. So that's what you're saying, take it off in that way. They just keep it as a seasonal use.
Well, I mean,
we don't have any length limitations on seasonal use trailers, right?
Right. Just the,
so where would the snowmobile trailer fall?
What?
It's an enclosed trailer, but it's also a seasonal use trailer.
I mean, the way...
This is the problem I had going way back to the seasonality issue. If it's enclosed and you don't know what someone has in there, what is it?
And that's, I think this is essentially the way this would read. You know, I mean, if it's an enclosed trailer, it's an enclosed trailer.
And you keep it there year round, and it has a 20-foot length limitation.
Exactly.
Okay, I agree with that.
I think the typical definition of the seasonal use component is something that's unenclosed.
Okay.
So that's why I just deleted and may include snowmobile trailers out of the definition.
Trustee Gingrich, do you second?
Yes.
Okay. Discussion? Trustee Zeller?
Just need to recap this then. An enclosed, a 20-foot enclosed utility trailer, enclosed snowmobile trailer, could be kept on hard surface year-round. Is that what I'm seeing? If I combine...
Yep.
H and 12.
Yep.
Okay.
So seasonal use just went out the window?
Yeah, I'm
well, it's covered seasonal use.
I'm not going to support that, so.
Yeah, this is where this is the problem I was having with the seasonality thing a long time ago.
Yeah.
Is that if you have a trailer that's shaped a particular way, it looks like a snowmobile trailer, it's enclosed, that's not allowed. But if it's shaped differently, square, you can put your snowmobiles in there and you're just fine.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense to me at all. So I agree with Trustee Gass. If it's an enclosed trailer, it's an enclosed trailer. If you can fit your snowmobiles in there, all the more power.
Right,
to
you're
you.
Not looking at them, so
that's
the
right.
Neighbors aren't looking at them.
That's right.
There's a question.
For me, just a couple of things if you could clean up Mr. Roberts, just for a parallel structure to have in item 10, just add a shell.
Point of order, will I vote on that last motion?
Sure.
Take something else on?
Yeah. And this doesn't even have to be in a motion, I don't think, but I'm going to propose it. Mr. Disher, what you got?
I have a question. Is a 20-foot trailer considered the length of the enclosed box or with the pump?
How do they measure those things, Mr. Roberts?
I was going by the size of the whatever you're using to.
The bed. The bed of the box.
Yeah, I always measure the bed on mine. When people ask what size trailer you got,
that's what I was going by.
The bed is what I'm thinking of. Is that consistent with how this is usually done?
Yeah, usually it's the bed size.
When they sell them, how do they sell them? I'm buying a 20-foot trailer, and what does that include?
Well, the bed trailer.
I would do it that way.
All right, do you want to vote on this? Are we all ready to... All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. I don't think I have to make a motion with regard to this. In terms of structure for the definitions in number 10, if you would write shall mean at the beginning for seasonal use trailer, and then number 12, shall mean. All the others have start out with shall mean. Trustee Zeller, yeah.
So with that last vote, then we've addressed all the highlighted areas?
Yes.
Just a request to the village clerk to put a completed copy in our baskets, please. Thank you.
Okay. We're good? Thank you. We're ready for item 10, correct? Mm-hmm. Item 10, action regarding animal control services. So I'll entertain discussion first. I think we all have the background on this.
I discussed this really briefly at our last meeting, and Ms. Hoffman and Ms. Derrickson are here. And before they get up, they're just going to do a brief presentation. I met with them a couple of different times. I just want to highlight a couple things to keep in mind that are kind of changes as we go forward if we decide to go with Ms. Hoffman, Ms. Derrickson for this service. In the past, of course, City of Green Bay has provided this service. It's been a pickup Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Saturdays and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 4. The proposal is to be a 24/7 service for domestic animal pickup, so that is a change for the service. In the past, we've had a flat rate as listed on the sheet. The proposal is to go with a $15 per hour rate plus mileage with an increased rate 8 p.m. weekdays, weekends, and holidays. So that's a change in that. We also will have a benefit cost-wise when we take advantage of the Bellevue Kennel versus going to the Humane Society with pickups of cats or kittens as an option for us. And a lot of the other things in the bottom are very similar to how we are handling it now or how we were handling it with Green Bay in the past. So with that, I'm just going to ask Monica and Troy to get up, and if you guys will just elaborate on anything, and then if there's any questions that you do have for them, and then we can just move forward from there and work on a contract. I did discuss going with the contracted service with them. The one big concern they have with that is the liability and getting liability insurance. As a contractor, they do work for other communities, and they are an employee in all the other communities, either like a flat rate type payment or an hourly payment. So they would like to continue as an employee rather than do a contracted services, and immediately it is the liability end of it. So with that, I'm going to turn over to you two if you would like to expand a bit.
If you'd like to go on with us, thank you.
Hi, it's Monica Hoff. This is Troy Erickson. We are both state certified humane officers. I've been in animal control over 20 years and was grandfathered into the state program actually when it originated, which was over 15 years ago. Troy just got certified in October. I started out working for Howard about 20 years ago. At one point, several years ago, the Bay Area Humane Society used to provide pickup services for all the smaller communities. They stopped doing that several years ago. At that time, Village of Suamico reached out to me, as did the Village of Bellevue, and I picked up those two communities. My vision has always been that for the smaller communities to have a state-certified humane officer at their disposal, you need to have at least two people like ourselves, and then probably have a small group of citizens that aren't necessarily certified but can provide round-the-clock pickup when we're not available. No matter how hard we try, there's no way that I'm always going to be available. I got a call for a wounded duck at approximately, you know, five cats roaming around at 6 o'clock this evening. So, you know, it's kind of like in order to have coverage, you need more people on an on-call basis. So what we thought we would do is Troy got certified in October. Our vision is that he would cover most of the east side and eventually take over Bellevue and work and also cover Alloway. I cover the west side. I just recently got hired by Tom Pittsfield as well. And then we would back each other up. And then that way the small communities would only be paying per call, all right, but yet would have a state-certified person at their disposal. Now, the other element that makes this work, and this is just getting started now, I'm just organizing this now, is when we want to have a citizen animal response team. These would be individuals which would sort of be in the venue of what the Humane Society used to be. If Troy or I would not be available, we would have citizens available, part-time people that would go to pick up animals. Anything involving welfare, cruelty investigations, law enforcement, ordinance enforcements would still be Troy or I. But those things usually aren't an emergency. Those are usually things that can go the next day or whenever we're available. So we're both trained in handling animals, cruelty and welfare investigations. The state has a rabies control program. The rabies relevant laws are things that we'd be familiar with. The big benefits would be having someone trained to deal with animals, to deal with the law, and that is familiar with the state laws and the local ordinances at the disposal of smaller communities without having to hire a full-time person, at which Green Bay does. Sharon Henson is a full-time animal control officer, and she's also state-certified, but obviously she works an 8-to-5 shift, and the Green Bay can support that need, or they have that need, whereas all the smaller communities don't. So, questions, I guess I would say.
Can you explain the liability issue and the employer-employee relationship issue and how that works?
Do you want to talk about that, Troy? Because you run a business right now going out and picking up nuisance wildlife, so...
Yeah, I run a business right now doing wildlife nuisance control, and my insurance permit only covers wild animals. It's run under a pest control situation and not a domestic situation. So in order for me to pick up something that's about roughly, I pay about $700 a year for $1 million policy. If I was to pick up another policy, it would be that again. I'd have to times that, and I don't know if we'd be able to make that up here, offering services.
And there's also, you know, there's the workman comps thing, you know, I mean, in terms of if we get bit, if either one of us would get bit by an animal and it would escape, we would probably have to undergo the rabies shots, or at least go to the hospital, maybe get treated. I can say that's very rare. I've never been bitten, knock on wood. But if we're in the middle of chasing a dog and or catching an animal and then, you know, for some reason a citizen becomes injured, that's the sort of thing we're thinking of. I've never had that happen, but if it would happen, it would just be necessary to have the backup, the community umbrella that all law enforcement officers have, that police officers have. And especially if we're going to be doing ordinance enforcement, any of that sort of thing, so...
Tracy, you said you check with other communities. Do you know how they do it in terms of payment and counting FTEs and all that sort of thing?
The other communities, Howard, Suamico, and Bellevue, all have them hired, as Monica hired as an employee. They play slightly different. I think, is it Suamico that does a flat rate?
Suamico does a flat rate for me per call, up till the call hits 2 hours. Then after 2 hours, they go to the hourly rate. if I'm doing an investigation or kennel license enforcement, that sort of thing, it's an hourly rate. I think that's a holdover from when they had to pay the Humane Society. It was a flat fee, and it was kind of, they patterned my employment after that. So
really, all of them treat them as employees. Then they are covered under our workman's comp and our liability insurance, so they would be covered under that, no different than any employees that we currently have. And that's what all the other communities are doing at this point with their contracts with them.
And then are there WRS implications? And
there potentially are, especially with Ms. Hoff, because she already is working
as well.
Yes, it probably is over the hourly at this point, so there would be some Wisconsin retirement with that as well.
And right now, Howard has me in that.
Yeah, so
I don't know if the other communities do or not, to be honest.
Then with the new, you would have to be under as you came here as well, huh?
Now it's all added together. I believe they changed that. Okay.
Or if you work for another community,
okay.
Where you had
then I assume that would be it's prorated by hours or something. Yeah, because I give every little report. It's not very much.
The overall cost of the village historically and with this proposal, roughly the same guesstimate.
You know, it's hard to say with Green Bay. We've had an average of 20 to 30 animals a year. We budget $3,000. We usually get close. That's between the Humane Society and Green Bay Services. So I would assume it would be comparable, if not a little less, with their service. When you look at the hourly rate versus the $30 per call and $60 per call, is if it's hourly and it takes an hour for a call, that's 15 versus 30, but then you have the mileage on top of that. Now, we have the benefit of Mr. Erickson living right down the street on Libel, so his mileage is not going to be great, hopefully, for any calls within the community, so that's a definite plus for us when you look at the mileage end of it.
Mm-hmm. I figured it out for an hour for an average call, it'd be about $24 then for me.
Any further questions? Trustee Zeller?
How are you notified of the need to come retrieve a domestic
Brown County
animal
dispatch
contained.
Does your dispatch.
Brown County
yes.
does?
Okay. Brown County dispatch will dispatch us, but again, sometimes we get calls directly because I assume that, you know, we'll be on the website. Here's your animal control officers, here's the phone number. And you can do that any way you want. You can put Brown County dispatch in there, but people, you know, every time nowadays, whenever you call somebody, you get caller ID, so your number is out there, so... but I take calls directly for all the communities because I'm on the website. So that's how that works. You know, a lot of it depends on what you want us to pick up and do. Village of Howard, you know, I pick up domestics. I handle animals. I handle injured animals. I track the licensing. I inspect all the kennel licenses. I do that for Swampville as well. We have a TNR program for feral cats. You know, we set up the Bellevue Kennel was something we just started last year. That was in conjunction with the Bay Area Humane Society. They allowed us to keep the cats the 7-day mandatory hold time. We held them now in Bellevue Kennel, and instead of paying the $155 per cat, because we hold them the 7-day state required straight hold time, they charge us $40 per cat. So those are all programs that, you know, if you want us to incorporate and do, we can do. If you want us just to pick up, you know, the dog, the cat that gets loose, we can do that too. But, you know, one of the reasons you want, you know, a humane officer, a certified humane officer, people that are in animal welfare as opposed to someone that's just picking up animals and hauling them in is because you have, you know, all these other programs. You know, every time we're aware of someone having a dog, hopefully we go back and see if it's licensed. And if it's not, we follow up with a letter and say, oh, by the way, I get a lot of just nuisance complaints, barking dog, neighbor's dog is pooping in my yard. A lot of those calls, Green Bay drives there, and because she's working full-time, she'll just drive there and deal with that. What I've done in a lot of the communities is rather than use up the time and effort of going to that place, because they might not be home by the time I get that complaint, I send everybody a letter first. And then that takes 10 minutes of office time as opposed to an hour of driving and mileage and all that. So those types of things, I assume you would want us to handle things that way, because it's most economical. And but that's just an example of what I'm talking about. So in that case, dispatch doesn't send us, you know, a lot of times we'll get something like that directly and we handle it.
From a resident.
Sure.
A resident.
Exactly.
So let me use an example. I've had two incidents of dogs coming into our garage and not leaving, would not leave. And the last time I called the Brown County non-emergency dispatch center, and they dispatched the Brown County, the Village of Alloway officer that was on duty at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a Sunday night at 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So then the officer came and took the dog, I'm assuming to the Humane Society, on a Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same procedure that you would use then, too?
Mm-hmm.
So if the...
You didn't know who the dogs belonged to, right? They weren't their neighbor's dogs.
No,
oh, okay.
No, so neither the dogs were right there.
Well, sometimes people know.
So, now, a previous dog that ended up in our neighborhood, in our yard, that wouldn't leave, we brought to the Alloway vet clinic, the Alloway Animal Hospital,
okay.
And that dog had a microchip to identify. It had no other identification.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case where the officer came and picked up the dog, then Mr. Erickson would do the same thing and then bring the dog to the Humane Society. And how would you... There's nobody at the Humane Society at that time of the night.
We have access.
We have access.
Oh, you do.
We have 24-hour access. We also carry microchip readers.
Yes.
Okay.
So the first thing we're going to do with a dog or cat is check for a microchip. So if we know, if there's a microchip, we can track down the owner right then and there and take it home and then write him a warning letter, of course, because their dog's running around loose.
So that's a good example. So they would not be cited or fined for the service that we're providing to them to find their animal.
It's up to you. Actually, the Village of Howard does have a pickup fee.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that again, we talked with Ms. Clark about Tracy about this. Probably one of the things you might want to have us do is kind of look at the ordinances, and if you want to do a pickup fee, Howard does that. If I take in a dog every month, the Humane Society gives me a report with all the dogs that were claimed, okay, in Howard, Swamico, and Bellevue, so I can go back. I got the owner's name, address, whatever. I send them a nice letter saying, oh, by the way, glad you were able to reclaim your dog. There is a pickup fee that's billed after the fact that does not include the Bayer Humane Society kennel fee, and that's what we do in Holland. Swamico does that. They have their clerk people do that. Bellevue, we even just recently incorporated that, too. So that might be something you look at.
They need to pay the Bay Area Humane Society fee upon... Picking up
yes.
the animal?
Yes.
Okay.
If we wanted to collect some sort of pickup fee to cover the cost,
mm-hmm.
like the mileage in our time, that would be a different, you'd have to incorporate, whatever
separate.
Your procedure, you'd have to authorize that billing and your clerk, we work something however you wanted that to be billed.
Okay.
You could do something like that. We do that in Howard. So.
Okay.
And I think we've had that because I had a dog a few years ago that got away a couple times and we got charged by the village and or the county, I don't remember who at the time, and the shelter, so it wouldn't be foreign.
Maybe it's in there and, sometimes those things are in there, but, the mechanics of making it happen just kind of fall by the wayside and over time.
So what if a dog isn't claimed and doesn't have any identification and sort of crosses municipal boundaries? Who do you charge? So you're out chasing after a dog and he's running all over you.
Ultimately, from the Bayer Humane Society's perspective, they're going to charge the community that brought the dog in. So, if a dog shows up in Alloway and Troy or I pick it up and take it in and they ask you where was the dog found, that's the municipality that gets billed.
Okay.
Now, if a Green Bay person claims it, well, then it's covered. There's been situations I'm trying to think of. There's been situations where, a resident will pick up a dog, let's say, and the resident lives in Alloway, but they picked it up in Howard, but drove home with it and then called animal control. Well, then, if we get that from them, when we turn the animal in, we say, actually, this animal was found at this address in Howard.
Okay.
And then Barry and Mainside, they're pretty good about that. But again, we follow up on that. So I usually follow up on those kinds of things. And so would Troy for Allie. Did you follow up and say, hey, you know, we picked that dog up, but it actually, we picked it up, you know, the people picked it up in Howard, so that's probably who should be billed. And some of that's a little bit
right
between municipalities. How much do you want to, you know, try to make that happen? But.
What Green Bay is switching to Packerland Kennel from Humane Society for stray pickup, or what are they, has that been decided?
My understanding is their finance committee has delayed that for 2 weeks to investigate the options. If I read the minutes correctly, it's at the finance committee, and they didn't vote on it. And I don't know all the details of that arrangement. There's several things to look at with that. There's the 7 day. The state mandates every animal, a cat and dog, to be held for 7 days to give the owner a chance to claim it. So you have that law requirement. Then after 7 days, it becomes an adoptable animal. So then you have that disposition. Okay, now who's going to set up some sort of procedure to find a new home for this dog, or put it down if necessary, or whatever, or cat. So I don't know if that's, I think they've broken that into several sections of requesting services, going out for bids. So, but I, like I say, last I saw it was at their finance committee, the recommendation.
Tracy, we have through the end of May to get everything in place.
Yeah, hopefully it's at the City Council tonight to extend our contract, because our contract actually had a 30-day ending, and that was, I think, today. So I asked them to extend it through the end of May, May 27th. So hopefully they'll vote on that this evening and give us a little time to figure things out. What I would like to do is sit down with Monica and Troy, and then with Officer Lotnow and Mark Roberts, because Mark and Rick also get involved with some of our pickups of animals, or get involved with, like Monica was talking about, barking dogs or problems with dogs using others' yards for doing their duty in their yard instead of their own yard. And Mark seems to handle a lot of that right now, so I think it's just a matter of coordinating some of that and seeing what we really need Troy and Monica to do, and then what we're already doing, and just make sure everything's consistent and set it up that way so it works well with everybody doing maybe a piece, or maybe shifting some out of where it is right now, if it's better to have Monica or Troy doing it.
I would think that that's not the best use of our enforcement officers.
No. You know, he sometimes, if he's going out on a call on something else, for instance, maybe there's branches or a call about something, he may see a dog in the yard or hear a dog barking in that home, and he frequently will come back, he writes the address down, and checks if they're licensed. And if they aren't, then he sends them a letter saying, please license your dog. So he does get involved in that aspect of it as well. And a lot of times it's not like he's out there doing that just on his own. It's something that he finds when he's checking on something else.
I think she was talking about the DEO, not the code enforcement officer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, yeah. I just meant, is that the best use of me? If
DEO
officer is running around checking on dogs, I'm not sure
That is one of the priorities for most of the communities, is that they don't want their directed enforcement officers or any of the county officers taken off the road to deal with an animal.
Right.
And I know in Howard Swanko it's especially important in Pittsfield, because we're on the west side, and the animal has to be brought all the way over to the humane side and the east side. That might not be quite so critical here in Alley because it's close, but even so, if a county officer has an animal in the back of their vehicle and they're taking it to their humane society and something happens, they can't just kick the dog out the door or the cat and then respond. So it does tie them up. Not only that, but they really aren't issued the equipment. You know, we carry bite-proof gloves, we carry nets, we carry catch poles, we carry treats. And we carry, you know, the things you need to humanely transport animals, to safely transport them to the kennel, you know, the very humane site. Most of the officers, you know, they can handle a friendly dog pretty well, or even a friendly cat. But if they would, you know, to be faced, their options are limited. If they're dealing with an aggressive animal, or a fearful animal, or a sick animal, that sort of thing. So.
And we also back up too, because there's a lot of times we want the officer assistant calls to them, where they'll get on there and find themselves in a situation where they don't know what to do with it either.
Yeah.
Right. Trustee Gass?
No, I mean, I think, you know, it's definitely a service that we need. You know, and Green Bay is not going to be providing it to us, hopefully after May 27th. You know, so I think it's a service we definitely need, and it sounds like there has to be some internal discussions between the administrator, you know, law enforcement, Mark, you know, and these fine folks to delineate who's going to be responsible for what, and I suggest that, you know, that probably goes back to the first meeting in May so we can iron out those details. But I think we definitely need the service, and I think it becomes even more pronounced when we have the nuisance or bad dog type cases getting, you know, a certified humane perspective in those cases is critical, you know, because we're talking about having a dog removed from the village or a dog destroyed.
Right.
And it's good to have, you know, qualified professionals, you know, assist in making those determinations. And if we have to do those kind of things, and luckily they're very few and far between, you know, we want to have, you know, the right kind of experts to consult to make sure it's the appropriate thing to do. So, you know, I welcome, you know, the dialogue between the different groups to delineate responsibility and then come back, you know, at the first meeting in May so we can go ahead and make an approval, you know, with understanding the framework of who's going to be responsible. What I think it seems to me that the hourly rates are reasonable, the, you know, mileage is reasonable. The only note I made when I reviewed it ahead of time was I thought you should be more independent contractors, but I understand the insurance issue. I mean, your rates would be much, much, much higher if you had to go out and get, you know, comprehensive liability and all these other things. So I think making them employees on a part-time basis is probably workable from that standpoint. But, you know, I defer until the next meeting when we'll get more information. We understand the exact framework for approval.
Trustee Dart?
Just thinking along the same lines, if we're talking about employing, don't we have to do that in closed session?
No.
No.
Okay.
We're talking about... No,
the contract negotiation.
That's not a personnel issue or anything that we needed.
We can. I don't think we have to.
Okay.
Right.
All right, Trustee Gass, did you want to make that into a motion?
Yeah, I'll
refer to the next meeting and let the administrator work with these folks to work out the details regarding proper context.
That would be my motion.
Okay. I'll second. Discussion? Trustee Green?
I just have one question. Troy, are you going to continue to do nuisance wildlife removal?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Because
yes.
I know a lot of people in the village and elsewhere. Yeah.
And that was one of the things that I really wanted to set straight, is that we were going to differentiate between the wildlife calls and the domestic calls, because I get a lot of calls from Alloway, from the village hall here to do the wildlife calls, and I would like to keep continuing doing those through my business and make sure that we had that fine line between, so we didn't have a conflict of interest here, is what I was worried about. So as long as it works the way that it's working right now, because I'm still getting wildlife calls and you still have domestics calls going to Green Bay, I don't see there being a conflict of interest. I mean, I would still, respond to injured wildlife. I mean, if we had like a hawk or something like that, I wouldn't have an issue with
right. Pretty much as humane officers, most of the municipalities, well, a couple of them have, I respond to everything, but things that are like a nuisance wildlife, like chipmunks in the chimney, you know, groundhogs, non-safety issues, mm-hmm. I usually refer people, with a few exceptions, to the commercial nuisance people. We usually respond to like injured wildlife or people to prevent a safety issue where people are trying to help it themselves. So we'll go there maybe, and just as the humane thing to do, it may involve just requiring an officer to come and help us assist the animal. Or birds of prey and some of the protected wildlife that are not of higher value necessarily, but protected in critical numbers. We usually will pick up a lot of those types of animals, injured animals, and take them to the wildlife sanctuary. So,
Trustee Dart, did you have something?
Yes, I just want to make sure that if Prinny gets loose and goes sleeps in Troy's garage, you'll return her and not turn her in.
Princess is always around.
We have to review our ordinances because apparently Trustee Zeller has a garage full of raw meat that he uses.
They don't know that I don't like dogs.
That's why
the scratch that off.
Okay, you ready to vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Item 11, action regarding the current kickball request to sell beer at Riverview Park. Trustee Green?
Move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Kopisch? Discussion? Mr. Lang?
Same group as last year, we didn't have any issues.
Great to hear. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 12, from the Park and Rec Committee minutes from the 25th of March, recommendation that the village start a volunteer goose patrol program. Before we entertain a motion on that, Mr. Lang, you want to talk a little bit about it?
Basically, what we're doing is mimicking what the city of De Pere is doing right now. They've been doing it for several years. Very successful. Individuals need to get a permit from the village, and it's allowing them to run their dogs within the parks, and they basically harass the geese. I should say that. They chase the geese off.
Well, they deter the geese.
That's what De Pere said. Yeah, we sent them all to alley. So
it's going to be like goose tennis, right, where you're just going to keep volleying them back and forth.
Now, there was a blue heron, a big one, in the Kiwanis Pond, so they're going to be careful not to...
Yes.
Okay.
They need to be under their control.
Good. I mean, this guy was huge. He was pretty... He was the first one I've seen this year.
So how do they run their dogs? If
they're well-trained dogs.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, and they're identified by the dogs that are wearing a red or an orange vest, so... easily identified, and they must keep their permit with them in the event an officer or something were to approach them.
Okay. Good.
Awesome.
Neat. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Green?
Move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Gingrich? Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Action regarding the Arbor Day tree proclamation. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Green.
Move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Dart. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item 14. Action regarding hiring a replacement street operator mechanic. Mr. Barron, before we take a motion, is there anyone who has a motion with regard to this item? I'd like to hear from Mr. Barron first.
Yep.
Mr. Barron.
The handout covers the basics of the situation that we have. Basically, Larry Mellon has announced his retirement effective May 31st. He's our most senior operator and our heavy equipment operator. upon his retirement, Joe Frisbee will take his role. Joe is the second heavy equipment operator. So in taking that role, which is basically a full-time operations position that Larry is involved in, because he's involved in all of the major crew work. Well, Joe Frisbee dedicated about 25% of his time in the garage assisting Bob Lemine. So with that switch, we will be short a person in the garage to help with the mechanics duties. What we thought would make the most sense for us, and we've been thinking about this for a while, that the next time that we would be looking at hiring a special equipment operator, we'd like to look for someone that has the ability to, has mechanic skills, mechanic experience, can work in the garage as well as operate equipment. So it would be the same as what we do now with Joel. He'd switch back and forth as the demands occur to support the garage. Whether we can find a person like that, I'm not sure. And that's why I... put a note in here that if we're not able to find a qualified candidate, then we may have to rethink this and just hire a special equipment operator. We looked at what we thought the salary would be, and we have that in here, the range that we thought we would be looking at. I have a preference, a strong preference, for new hires that we look toward the entry-level area if we can, because of the fact that we have a lot of senior employees, I'd like to spread out the age group within the staff and the salaries. And so this was our thought process. This is what we think we should be doing, and attached to it is a position description that we prepared for a special equipment operator / mechanic one. Our goal is to have, if we can't accomplish this, is to have someone on board in June, sometime in June.
Did this go to Public Works?
No.
Really?
No, it did not.
Trustee Zeller?
At our last Public Works meeting, I brought this up, and Craig was in the process of putting this position description together and the plan of trying to handle two duties or two functions. So we have not seen this, and our meeting was last week, Thursday. So we have not. Public Works has not seen this. I do have a question, if I could, at this point. Craig, on the mechanic qualifications, it's fairly general. The last paragraph under position qualifications, additional training in automotive and mechanical trades is required. When an automobile is serviced at a dealership or an auto service center, I often see the certifications on the wall regarding the individual's expertise or qualifications in a certain area of mechanics, and I think it's at ASME. Shouldn't we try to define that so we have some confirmation of their qualifications?
We discussed that when we put this together, and the reason that it's not included in this is that Bob Lemine felt that we would be better off not requiring the formal certificate. We may well be able to get it, but he felt that we may find a candidate that could obtain the certificate that's very qualified and would fit our salary range, and that would allow us that flexibility of doing that. Since Bob carries all the certificates, we don't necessarily have to have a certified mechanic, at least at a starting point. So that was the reason why.
And then one further question for the... let's take the loader, for instance, or the grader. Are there special equipment operator certifications for that type of equipment? They're like third party.
Well, there's not a, as far as I know, there's not a third party certification for that. This is internal to us. And the reason we define it as a heavy equipment operator is because grader operation is a special skill set. There's a lot of training that an individual goes through to be good at that. But we use this this classification because when you're dealing with full-time operation of the loader, that's a big piece of equipment, and it's they're on the street with it. So it's you really got to know what you're doing, because we haven't had accidents with that heavy equipment, but that's because the two individuals are very well trained and experienced with it. The only time anybody else operates a loader is primarily when it's a single duty and it's not in traffic. A lot of times it's at night snow plowing, so they're not in a situation where they're in and amongst traffic. So it's basically internal to us and how we define it. And the skill set that we require before an operator can be full-time in either one of those two pieces of equipment. It's a safety issue related to backing into the street, back and forth, you know, loading bales, loading brush in traffic.
So you'd hope to find someone that could operate, that has experience operating that equipment, or would you envision this person going into the garbage and recycling pickup role thing?
An individual that we would hire would not be in heavy equipment. Would not be.
Okay.
He'd basically be a special equipment operator, which might be driving a truck. It might be a small snow plow. It would be snow plowing, but it wouldn't be the large loader, and it wouldn't be the grader.
Okay.
I mean, basically, that's 3 to 5 years of experience before an individual is allowed to operate that equipment on their own, especially in a crew operation, brush or leaves or something like that.
Then if you're successful finding this quarter percent person for mechanically,
yes,
able to work in the shop,
yes,
then would that free up John Jerebek to return to parks 100%?
No. Not if we continue our present operation, no.
You would still need John to come up to the village hall for some type of mechanic problems or equipment problems?
To not require John would require close to 50% of this individual's time in the garage. The other part of the equation is John's experience is with the baler, and that's very helpful. That's a skill set that the other fellows really don't have, so that's very specialized.
Has John been involved with the selection of the new baler equipment at all?
Yes, and same as Dave Disher.
Dave has been helping with that
selection. Dave more so than John, but yeah, definitely, because they're the ones that really know that equipment.
Dave knows that operation, that baler operation.
He's a farmer expert.
Yeah. Right. I think we should recognize Dave for that contribution. So I think that the initial idea of a much faster means of picking up the leaves probably came from Dave, and
it did, yes.
And the customer satisfaction that we achieved with that after we worked out the problems, I think has been fantastic.
And the reason this didn't go to Public Works is because of the time schedule. We didn't anticipate this retirement at this time, and it came up about 4 weeks ago. And so in order to keep the process moving, we came directly to the board with it. That was the reason.
Public Works might have Thursday, right? Last Thursday?
No, this Thursday.
Okay. I always like that, you know, the folks that know the operation on the board most intimately to get a first glance at it, and I always like to hear their response to it. Sounds like we definitely have needs, and can't just go without. So. I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move to approve the initiating the hiring with this position description as attached.
Is there a second? Trustee Cobra seconds. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Unless there are objections, we'll take items 15A through E together. Is there a motion with regard to items 15A through E? Trustee Green.
Move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Gass.
I will second.
Discussion? Mr. Burnett, anything?
All the assessments are below the estimated values that you originally approved when we initiated the process. So they're all below what we estimated. All of the residents have been mailed the information, so they all know about it. And actually, a fairly significant number have called in and asked for, where's our bill? We want to pay it. So this process has worked out very well. Superb, and it's working out well in our next project. We're close to 70% of the residents agreeing to go ahead and replace laterals, which is a very positive thing for us. This is the final step. When you approve this, then we can go ahead and issue the invoices in May or June and finalize the process where the residents can either select the payment plan or pay in full. So this is the final process before going ahead and invoicing.
And I think we should recognize Mr. Burnett on creation of this program. And it's turned something that's oftentimes very contentious with residents into something that, you know, they're calling us wanting to pay their bill. So I think it's working out really well. So thank you for that contribution. Anything further? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 16, action regarding the revised U.S. Cellular
cell antenna agreement for the water tower. I seem to have one of these. So. Trustee Gath?
I'll move to adopt the revised agreement to permit the relocation of three antennas on the tower.
Is there a second? Trustee Gingrich, seconds. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 17, action regarding the appointments to the village committees. I will make a motion as outlined in your handout. The folks listed in red, Jeff Jackals, Marlene Crowley, Stephen Jones, and Carol Shibley, that they're...
second page.
Oops. John Truster, Cameron McCain, and Patricia Herden. Is she right here?
No.
Strike the last one. Be reappointed, and all those folks are under that that amendment that we made some years back that they could extend their service beyond 10 years. And then the new appointment is Diane Woodhead to Economic Development.
And the remaining in black will serve another term.
Yeah, the remaining in black are going to serve another term. So is there a second to these recommendations for committee appointments? Trustee Green?
Second.
Discussion? Please spread the word. We're always looking for good people on all of these committees. I know some of them are a little bit thankless, but the more input we have, the better. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Unless there are objections, we'll take items 18A through C. Is there a motion with regard to items 18A through C? Trustee Gass?
I'll move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Green? Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Is there a motion to convene into closed session? Bless you. Pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 19.851C, considering employment, promotion, compensation, etc., namely the finance director negotiation and performance evaluations of employees. Trustee Dart, is there a second? Trustee Gingrich, roll. Trustee Kokish?
Yes.
Trustee Gingrich?
Yes.
Trustee Green?
Yes.
Trustee Van Nomen is an aye. Trustee Dart?
Yes.
Trustee Gass?
Yes.
Trustee Zeller?
Yes.
We're in closed session.